The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Monday! Monday, Monday, Monday. It's a Monday in the big city. How we doing? Evan and Tiki on The Fan for the next 4.5 hours, and there is a ton to discuss. We'll check in on the results of our quarterback bingo game we played a few months ago. Where will all the quarterbacks end up? Well, they finally ended up in places, so we'll see how right we were. The latest on the Knicks head coaching search, including reading the tea leaves on who Jalen Brunson prefers. And Pete Alonso continues to assault National League pitchers with a huge weekend. But I want to say this about the New York Yankees. While they did lose 2 out of 3 to the Boston Red Sox, I still believe the American League East is over. I still have complete confidence that they are the team to beat in the American League, despite what happened over the last 2 days. But I think it is fair, Teague, 64 games into this season, to at least be open and honest about what our Yankee concerns are.
Yeah.
And to me, and I haven't been able to say this in a very long time because Brian Cashman's done such a great job over the years of always having this feature of the team be solid, their bullpen's not very good. Mm. And even with a returning Luke Weaver, hopefully on the short end of 4 to 6 weeks, for me, I raise my hand, and we'll hear from you throughout the day, and we'll hear from you, Teak, and Sean, and everyone's concerns. The number one concern to me, and we saw it on display this weekend, the bullpen kind of sucks.
Yeah, I mean, and it gave away a lot, but some of that is because of starting pitching. And yesterday in particular, with Carlos Rodon not being able to figure it out in the sixth inning and hitting batters and then walking batters and giving up a 3-run home run, it really give the Red Sox a lot of cushion. Now, the Yankees came back from that, but I still think, you know, 2 years ago or 3 years ago when Judge hit 62 home runs, I felt that season was odd because it was like Aaron Judge and nobody else.
Right.
It was, if Aaron Judge quite literally doesn't get a hit, they don't score runs. And so it was so dependent on Aaron Judge. This year, it's not that way. Right, there are other players. Paul Goldschmidt's playing some pretty good baseball right now. I think Trent Grisham has been good, even though this last month was rough. Ben Rice has been a revelation, and I think every Yankee fan is excited to see him grow and what he's going to do. But yesterday, Aaron Judge was Herculean, Evan. 2 of 3 out of 4, hit 2 home runs in this game. And you would think, you know, going back to the history of Aaron Judge here, that when he has a day like that, it's just KD bar the door.
Yeah.
Right? They're winning and it's a runaway. He got smoked.
Yeah.
Right? And there were parts of this game where they were down significantly. And so, like, to me, it is Aaron Judge is a super, super human baseball player. But there's just not enough around him to follow him. Right? To go with him. He's like carrying his trident. Like, let's go. March forward. And yeah, every now and then someone comes with him, but too often, not enough guys do. What he's doing this year is absurd. Right? He's going to hit close to 400 and probably have 60 home runs again. And
it's a better year.
130 RBIs.
It's a better year than even the 2 monster years he had in the last 3 years.
I agreed. But it still doesn't feel enough. That's concerning to me.
And that is despite the Yankees scoring the most runs in the American League.
Yes.
And, you know, being a big time offense. And like you said, getting some production outside of Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Judge. So that's still your number one concern, the offense after Judge?
Maybe it's recency because of what we just saw, but we saw 2 games out of this Red Sox series.
I also saw them score 23 runs. I mean, they scored plenty of runs. Like, even yesterday, they scored 7 runs. To me, Carlos Rodon obviously imploded after the bottom of the 5th inning or after the top of the 5th inning when there were 2 outs and nobody on. He has a 2-0 lead, and he's cruising to another really good start. And obviously, it all fell apart when he walked Rafael and he gave up the home run to Campbell and then what happened in the 6th inning. But to me, what made it worse is the bullpen's not any good, and they let a close game slip away. And right now, here's the real kind of gauge I have for bullpens. Who do you trust?
Mm-hmm.
Ask yourself that if you're a Yankee fan. Who do you trust?
The guy with the hamstring injury?
Yeah, that's it. And he's not walking through that door yet. I mean, maybe Tim Hill to a degree if he's facing a lefty, if he's in the right lane facing left-handed batters. But outside of that, it's not a long list of guys that I would trust. And this is a very weird conversation because the Yankee bullpen has been mostly awesome in the Brian Cashman era. I mean, you look back over the last 5 years, they're always a top five bullpen when it comes to ERA, year after year after year. As we sit here today, they are 15th in Major League Baseball in bullpen ERA. That's middle of the pack with a 3.80 ERA. So to me, it's the bullpen.
I think it's Aaron Boone. And I think it's Aaron Boone handling the bullpen. Listen, let's take a little trip down memory lane for a second. The World Series, while everybody harps on the fifth inning and game five, I will always, as most Yankee fans remember, Nestor Cortez, not Tim Hill, game one, and he's handling the bullpen. That was just a microcosm. Here we are, Evan. This dates back the last two games. Saturday night, what he did with Ian Hamilton having Devin Williams up, I'm sorry, is a disgrace. He let Ian Hamilton come into a game that the Yankees and that offense that Tiki was just talking about fought and climbed their way back down one run. Ian Hamilton, bink, 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 first three guys get on. Devin Williams doesn't come in, doesn't even care to come in. He lets Ian Hamilton implode that game. And then last night, all right, you don't go to Devin Williams. You bring in Johnny Loizaga, he has that fine inning, brings him out. Loizaga's not a two-inning guy. Let's that implode. The moment it begins to crumble, two runs there. He goes to the human white flag and Brett Hedrick, too. And I understand that they're not deep in the pen, but we didn't see Devin Williams the last two nights. I don't know, Evan, what happened to the forward-thinking baseball where you go to your best reliever that's out there in the high-leverage spot, so that's it? We're just only using Devin Williams in closing spots now without Weaver? Well, I thought it was a mess the way Boone handled the pen the last 2 days.
Two things can be true. I can agree with you on the way he handled the bullpen Saturday, but also remind you that there's very few guys in this bullpen you trust. Mm-hmm. And the guy you started by saying you trust the most has a 6.08 ERA, Devin Williams. It's not like they're loaded with trustable arms out of this bullpen.
Okay, he has a 6.08 ERA, and I don't love Devin. I've been on the train, don't sign him at the end of the year.
Right.
But he has pitched better over the last month and a half.
He has.
And I just look at this spot now with Weaver out. We talked about when Weaver comes back in 4 to 6 weeks, you know, we'll figure out using all the relievers in the best spots. Shouldn't that be activated now? Because Williams should have come into that game Saturday night. And the moment he didn't and it imploded, how did you let the game get out of hand yesterday? And now you didn't use him either night. And it's, look, there's a balancing act to get through a whole season, but there's nothing more demoralizing to a team than allowing their offense to fight back in a game and you mishandle the bullpen to keep them in the game once they fought back.
Yeah, it's just not a concern I'm going to have in October. Like, his decision to go to Nestor Cortez versus Tim Hill, which was a controversial decision, wasn't about playing for the 162. The decision to not go to Devin Williams over the weekend was playing for the 162.
Okay, right. But either
way, he's not
going
to do that in the postseason. He's not going to need to do that in the postseason.
Yeah, but shouldn't you? And especially in against the rival, even though it's not really the rival we've determined, it's the Los Angeles Dodgers, not the Boston Red Sox, but this is a rivalry game, and it's the rubber match of the three-game series. You know what I mean? So, to me, why not? And especially because you have a day off. Right? It's not as if...
Perfectly sampled, Tiki. And one more on that before, just on Saturday night, when you're saying, oh, well, you're playing for the 162. Mm-hmm. Was he playing for the 162 when he cautionarily sat Volpe and Jazz Chisholm on Saturday night not to be in the lineup, but yet he deemed the game important enough to bring them in the fight back later on in the game, but it wasn't important enough to go to Devin Williams then and keep Ian Hamilton in? Like, those two things didn't add up. So if it was that cautionary playing for 162, then just leave Volpe and Jazz out of that game Saturday night. You sat him for precautionary reasons. Mm. It didn't add up with his bullpen decisions. It's a mess right now, and I love Booney.
A lot of things change over the years. One thing stays the same. Yankee fans default is to blame Aaron Boone. And you're an example of it.
The default is it's Aaron Boone. The only thing I fault Aaron Boone for is he left Carlos Rodon in for a batter too long.
I disagree with that. I know it didn't work out, but when did you want to take him out?
After he walked. After he walked.
Ref Snyder.
Because he was struggling.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With, what's his name? The DH. I'm forgetting.
Rafael Devers.
He was struggling with Devers, and he ultimately hits him.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then he walks Ref Snyder. And you could tell his control just wasn't. He was frustrated.
Yeah.
You could see it. And then he gives up a three-run home run. It puts the Red Sox in a comfortable lead.
But you know what I think that was? So what was weird about last night is the Yankees are up 2-0, and Carlos Rodon is dealing. And he looks great. And he's had a wonderful season. He's proven all the critics wrong. He can handle New York. He's like the pseudo-second ace after Max Fried. There's no sign of him falling off with two outs and nobody on in the fifth inning, and then he walks Rafaela, gives up the home run to Campbell. And even then, I'm like, all right, you know, fart in the wind. I mean, it stings.
Right,
like, you
because it was a lucky home run.
It was kind of lucky.
Yes.
And I go into the sixth inning thinking, all right, let me see if I can get another inning out of Carlos Rodon. He hits Rafael Devers, who's a tremendous hitter. Mm-hmm. He walks Rob Refsnyder. I'm still there thinking he's going to get Narvaez out. But this can get through this inning.
But this is what happens with Rodon. As soon as he walks somebody, he's susceptible for a home run.
Yeah, but this leads back to my initial point. A part of why I'm not in a rush to take Carlos Rodon out is because this bullpen does not feature many arms I trust. Mm. Now, it will get better when Luke Weaver returns, and they probably will be very aggressive at the trade deadline. In fact, this may be their priority at the trade deadline.
Yeah, because they're scoring runs. You're right. I mean, look, they were down whatever the score was, 7-3. They came back.
Yeah.
They made it a game. 7-5, and then they get to 7, and it was the bullpen that gave it up.
They scored 23 runs this weekend.
Right. They scored 7 yesterday.
Yeah, they scored 7 on Saturday and Sunday, and they lost both games. Though, this leads to one other concern I have about the Yankees. The bullpen is my number one, and I think they will try to fix it at the deadline. But here's concern number two, and you sort of, like, briefly touched on it. You made a comment about Trent Grisham, how he hasn't really done much in a month.
Yeah.
Trent Grisham and Ben Rice, two guys who got off to wonderful starts. Let's face it, they haven't hit in a month.
Mm-mm.
Both of them. Going back to May 13th, so a little bit less than a month, Trent Grisham sitting 177 with one home run and a 550 OPS.
Wow.
It is possible that Trent Grisham is just going back to being what we thought he was at the beginning of the season, which is a fourth outfielder. Ben Rice, who we're still not sure about, since April 30th, that's a month and a half of a sample size, he's hitting 208 with a 666 OPS. Now, the good news is Giancarlo Stanton. That's the good news.
Right.
The good news is there is someone walking through that door who can change things. But those two guys specifically were two of the big surprises to start the year in terms of how impactful they were offensively. And I think it's fair to wonder, well, what are they?
Yeah, it's hard to know because it's not as if Trent Grisham is old and whatever, washed, because he's only 28 years old. But you saw this moment where he just felt like this is a perfect spot for him.
Mm.
Playing center field, which is great because he's a fantastic center fielder, a gold glover, as we all know. And he's raking in the leadoff spot, getting extra base hits, home runs, etc. Maybe he just needed to be in the right spot, the right change of scenery to become a star or semi-star, whatever you want to call him. And now you don't feel that anymore. And so without that, you just now become dependent even more so on Aaron Judge being Aaron Judge. And he says being Aaron Judge.
He's been amazing.
But everybody else is not following suit.
Yeah, I think what's good about this Grisham-Rice situation is Stanton is on his way back. Mm. And even though you can't rely on him to play every single day, at least you are getting a reinforcement. The other thing to keep an eye on in terms of concerns is the rotation after you get past the big 2.5 of Rodon, Fried, and sort of Clark Schmidt. What is Will Warren? What is Ryan Yarbrough, who got his you-know-what packed over the weekend? Now, they do have Marcus Stroman slowly making his way back. I'm not sure how many people trust him. And Luis Hill, I guess, is going to come back, though we haven't really heard a concrete update on him.
We haven't heard anything on Luis Hill.
But the rotation after the big 2.5. Does that give you any pause?
Nah, because you know what? This rotation is going to be good enough. You mentioned the AL East being over to navigate the 162. And I'm not in as big a rush to see Luis Hill right now, but if Luis Hill comes back and he's throwing in August and he's throwing in September, and I do have trust in Max Fried, he's healthy, we'll put a pin in Carlos Rodon. I do think they're going to have enough to navigate October series, and I think they have enough to push through the 162. I think just, you know the way it is, once these guys in the playoffs go through two turns, you're itching to go to the bullpen anyway. I think this team's going to need two reinforcements in the pen, and I'm less worried when you think about the long-term goals about what they have internally at the starting rotation.
That's why I agree with you that the bullpen, or that's why I say it's the bullpen, because you're right. When you get to October where the Yankees are headed, you're going to heavily rely on arms to get big outs. And right now I look at this bullpen and I basically see one guy I fully trust.
Yeah.
And that one guy who I fully trust is not active right now in Luke Weaver. I'm getting back there with Devin Williams. I think we all are. And Tim Hill is great in the role that he's in.
Yeah.
But you know, I can't put him as a, you know, big time trust guy because you really only trust him to get a lefty out in a big spot.
Right. And he had some bad luck yesterday because brought in to be to close it down with the bases loaded. He threw a strike and should have been 1-2, called it a ball, and then he got hit right back up the middle, which gave the another insurance run for the Red Sox. So I like Tim Hill, but I do agree with you, Evan. He's limited in what he's available to do.
The New York Yankees are in first place. In my humble opinion, they will never see second place for the rest of the season, but they're not a perfect team. We'll get your calls on what your biggest concern is as we move into the, we're really getting close to the first half of the season being over. We're at 64 games. We're almost there. We get to what Hunter Dobbins said in the next few minutes, including how the Yankees responded on Friday. I didn't feel that much juice for Yankees Red Sox. And in my opinion, Yankees Red Sox is no longer like the Yankees' biggest rival. And Tiki made the case it's the Dodgers. I made the case incorrectly it was the Mets. Tiki actually convinced me he was right, it's the Dodgers. And Sean, even on an off day, sent a very angry audio message that it is still the Red Sox.
Salty.
So
I don't think he was that angry. I think he was just right to the point.
It was very aggressive.
It was aggressive, yeah.
We took it aggressive.
Very aggressive. Here's the way to prove if you're right or wrong. You just lost 2 out of 3 to the Boston Red Sox. Are you pissed? Are you angry?
I'm very pissed.
Okay.
And furthermore,
are you worried, though?
Well, I'm not worried, but I will. I actually said this on the air. I'm not sure if you were here, too, Evan. We hadn't played the Red Sox yet when he was ready to bury him, and they have a lot of chances to beat us and catch up. So let's see what happens next week when we get the punch back. But I'm just saying, look, my own personal thing, I can only tell you this. I had about 15 people that came over to my house Saturday night, all invited themselves because it was Yankees Red Sox. Mm. So for you to say that's, you know, not the biggest rival, that hasn't happened yet this baseball year.
You just allow people to invite themselves over. That's my takeaway.
It starts with a brother-in-law texting me. I
was going to say, this is family, right?
Family and friends of family and somebody else that works here, but all little by little. Yankees Red Sox. What are you doing?
Bro, do I know you?
Right. Get out. That's what it becomes. But you don't do that for other games that aren't rivalries.
Hey, one point for you in terms of Yankees Red Sox still having that rivalry juice. They bumped the Yes announcers off on Saturday and Sunday.
We had
to deal with Fox and ESPN on back-to-back nights. But then again, the same thing happened when you faced the LA Dodgers.
Same thing. Well, it's a World Series rematch.
I understand. Yeah. Let's get to your calls, 888-808-1019. The Yankees are still in great shape. There's still 4.5 games up in the American League East, and to me, far superior to Toronto and Tampa and Boston. But there are concerns, and to me, it's the bullpen. That would be my number one concern. Let's go to Bob in Keyport. Good afternoon, Bob.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Oh, it's good.
I had a question. Do you think that when Giancarlo comes back, Rice is going to be the second-string catcher and Ascaro is going to be sent down?
No. Not at all. Mm. I think Ben Rice is still going to play half the time.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Giancarlo is going to be handled with such care that he'll face every lefty. Rice will still occasionally get in, maybe 3-4 days a week. Stanton sits like the other 3 days.
Because Stanton's not going to play every day.
No, he didn't even last year when he was healthy. And I don't think the Yankees are comfortable with making Ben Rice the full-time backup catcher. It's almost like a convenient thing that he can catch.
It's a fantasy thing.
Yeah.
Meaning a fantasy baseball thing.
Absolutely.
You can use him as a catcher.
Though I must say, the team in our fantasy league that has Ben Rice with catcher qualifications is a good friend of mine named T-Roy, and I should announce to the world he's in last place. So it hasn't really helped. And that's a real shame because he's never in last place.
That's probably because the rest of his roster is garbage. That's not very little to do
now
with Ben Rice.
With Ben Rice, yeah. Actually, he's a diehard Yankee fan who had Juan Soto for the last few years as a keeper and decided to keep Juan Soto because even though he's a Yankee fan, he didn't want him on his team. He ran it back with Soto, and I think Soto's been killing him because from a fantasy perspective.
Well, not as of late.
Well, all he does
he's
is get
six times yesterday.
Yeah, with a bunch of singles.
That's true.
You know, you're a keeper. There are high expectations. You got to hit some over the fence.
Hit one home run, please.
John is in Maspeth. What's up, John?
How's it going? Evan, so I got two parts here. I got a question for you at the end, an important question.
Yeah.
But I want to defend the Yankees bullpen, right?
First off,
we know what Luke Weaver is. Luke Weaver's the closer. Devin Williams is not the closer. I've already explained that. When Devin Williams pitches just the eighth inning, his ERA, 2.12.
Yeah.
Now, we got Tim Hill, who's a lefty specialist, where lefties are only hitting 130 against him.
Yep.
We got Leiter and Cruz, two strikeout guys. Cruz is the third highest strikeout per nine inning guy as a reliever, and Leiter is 10th. So those are two good guys in bullpen.
Here's the problem. Let's go to Fernando Cruz. Since he's come back from the injured list, in his last seven games, he's pitched to a 9 ERA.
And again, it's not about what he's done. It's about, do you trust him? And right now, it's hard to trust him.
Well, we got to give it more time. You know, the trade deadline's still about 6 weeks away. But, Evan, I got a question, though, right?
Yeah.
Now, if we put this question on your Mets, what position do they need? I'll give you my answer right now. My answer is I think the Mets need a right fielder because the Mets have played four championship contending teams right now. The Yankees, Dodgers, Phillies, and Cubs.
Yeah.
And right now, that guy in right field against those four teams is hitting .097 against them this year. So you guys need more production out of that guy in right field when playing these top teams and not just hitting good against
Well, Bobby. I'll tell you something interesting, John. In those 16 games against those top teams, the Mets are 10-6, which is pretty good. The Mets have won those games against top teams. The only top team they didn't beat successfully was actually yours. Mm. A credit to the New York Yankees, right, who won that series. But 3-0 against the Phillies, 4-3 against the Dodgers, 2-1 against the Cubs, if we're including those teams as the top teams. I will answer your question, even though you were being sarcastic and you just wanted to take a shot at Juan Soto. Believe it or not, if you asked me, and I'll spend a lot of time doing this on the Rico, I'm sure, what's your biggest concern about the New York Mets? There are two. Number one is their bullpen, believe it or not.
Really?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. Because much like you just said, it doesn't matter what the guys have done.
Yeah.
It's do you trust them moving forward? That was your point about Fernando Cruz, right?
Of course.
That's my point about the Mets. Oscar Brazaban's been awesome. He's been amazing. He's been overworked. Do I trust that he's going to pitch to a 1-3 ERA the rest of the season? I mean, I don't, by the way.
He's continuing to do it. So until there is a string of games where he doesn't, you have to trust Brazaban. Obviously, Edwin Diaz is Edwin Diaz again. Maybe not as dominant as he once was, but he's top reliever in the National League right now. I guess with Reed, he scares you a little bit.
Yeah.
But if they feel solid to me,
they've been better than solid. They've been great. But again, the question is, what's your concern moving forward? Not what are you pleased with over the first 66 games? Look, over the first 66 games, the Met pitching's been great. Am I convinced that's going to continue? No. So that'd be one of my concerns. Bullpens are a concern for everybody. And I think the Mets and the Yankees are both going to be in the market to add a big-time reliever before the deadline. I think the problem they may run into is how many big-time relievers are actually going to be available.
I was going to say, just because every team that's in the – I mean, there's a lot of them, too, that are just good and couldn't use an – not even use an upgrade, but will want an upgrade, especially surprise teams that can want to take a run, like Detroit.
Yeah. No, they're
why not?
There's not a lot of set. There's going to be more buyers than sellers, unfortunately, which is just going to hike up the price on the cost. Like, I was joking around before the show about Raisel Iglesias because the Braves are a disaster, and they had an awful, awful weekend, and Iglesias lost his closer's job after being one of the better closers in baseball last year. And I said to you, boy, Braves suck. They may end up trading him away, and I'd take him. I'm the Mets or the Yankees. I would take that project on because relievers are so fickle. They are so up and down. Matt in Hillsborough, New Jersey. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Bruce, I agree. The Yankees, Red Sox, just for now, the buzz is kind of just gone. We were at the game Saturday. We were in stands. No one's fighting. No one's yelling at each other. No one's yelling at each other in the stands. In the stands themselves. Like, it was just kind of black. Usually you can name every player, every reliever on the Red Sox. Other than Devers, he was the only one that got booed. Like, they may have been playing, the Padres or something. Like, it was just
nuts. I think you hit on two things, Matt. Number one, they're no longer fights, and I agree. Fights are a great indicator of how much you hate another team and their fan base.
Or even the desire to fight.
Right.
Like, don't even look at me wrong. Otherwise, you're getting a beer in your face and maybe a fist following behind.
That's so right.
It doesn't feel that way anymore. The players aren't hateable.
We are not endorsing fighting, but our last caller's right. That's a sign that the rivalry's dead. You don't want to punch a Red Sox fan in the face. Yet you want to punch a Dodger fan in the face or a Met fan in the face.
Right.
I think that's an underrated point by Matt. And again, if you're just tuning in, Tiki and I are not endorsing that Yankee fans should jump Red Sox fans, but it is a sign that you don't care about them anymore.
I'd be stunned if over the course of 3 days there wasn't a single fan punched in the face between either of the bars outside of the stands.
Great question. If you are a Yankee fan, and Tommy will take your call anonymously, okay? Call up and let us know if you punched a Red Sox fan in the face.
Or got punched in the face.
Or got punched in the face. Yes. And we'll write a whole police report.
Yes.
Okay?
Interesting.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how we'll determine this. And I guarantee no one, there won't be anybody.
Right, we'll call the perpetrator Rafael Devers or something like that.
Also, the rivalry, for everybody sitting out back, you're talking about the players. We did lose an ingredient of getting that Bregman as a Red Sox in Yankee Stadium.
We did. And the other thing, and this is why, if I'm buying stock in the future, right, Yankees Red Sox is going to come back ferociously.
Yeah.
Because the Red Sox are so loaded with good young players. We haven't even seen Roman Anthony yet, who's going to get up here before you know it. And Christian Campbell, despite going deep the other day, it's like, who's that? Marcelo Meyer, same thing. They're loaded with young talent. And I think there's going to come a point sooner rather than later where that phone call that was just made about, I don't know who these guys are, that's going to change. But it's got to grow.
Right.
And we're just not there yet. And we're just not. And he's right. Other than Rafael Devers, you don't hate Jaron Duran. You don't hate Rob Refsnyder, even though you developed him. Or Carlos Narvaez, even though you developed him. Mm-hmm. Or Romy Gonzalez, or Trevor Story, or Rafaela. Like, it's just a bunch of names. But I do think eventually, as these young guys develop, and if they beat you a lot, which they just did, and we'll see what happens next week in Boston, that it could come back.
I don't disagree. There was a time we had no idea who Dustin Pedroia was and didn't hate him either.
You're right. Now, one thing that helped was Hunter Dobbins. If you guys didn't see it, and I'm sure you did, Hunter Dobbins made the comments to the Boston Herald over the weekend that he grew up as a Red Sox fan. Really, his dad grew up as a Red Sox fan.
That's right.
He was more indifferent to rooting interest. He just wanted to play. And out of loyalty to his dad and his hatred for the Yankees growing up, he would never sign with the Yankees, even if they were the last team in Major League Baseball.
He would retire.
He'd retire. And that got a lot of juice on social media.
You know that's total BS, though.
Well, probably, but he still said it.
You want some money? Or you just want to go work at a grocery store?
Right. But I was curious to hear his reaction on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Yankee fans are going to be out for blood. And just as more proof that we do not live on social media, Yankee fans didn't even react. I don't think Yankee fans knew about the Dobbins comment until after. I think that night it started to come out. And even this morning, I think, you know, you listen to Boomer and Geo, you heard about it. Maybe you read the newspaper, you heard about it. Your friend told you at work. Like, that story, which could have riled up Yankee fans, it never connected because I'm convinced no one knew about
it. I didn't know about it until watching the pregame. Aaron Judge is doing an interview, doing the pregame, and he's asked about it.
Yeah.
And he's like, I got nothing for you, basically. He didn't respond to it. And then he goes yard on the first pitch from Dobbins. But I didn't know about it till then. And then it was kind of like, all right, well, he got his comeuppance because Aaron Judge took him yard.
Then he settled down.
And then he pitched great.
Right.
I blame Elon Musk for us not knowing it because I think when I first read, a lot of people thought the same thing. A, who's Hunter Dobbins? B, are they making up a Red Sox and this is some kind of ball sack sports quote? I mean, you don't know what to trust. Did this guy really say this?
Is there a blue check by that guy?
Right. And even if there is, did he pay for it? He has 9 followers?
And you're right. There was no audio or video of it because it was done as a print interview in the Boston Herald. I did think that Jazz Chisholm asked about it, brought a lot of attention to it. Because if you're watching the Yankee game last night, you had no idea.
Only because of the timing of when he was asked about it. That was unfortunate.
Why? Because he made an error while he was being interviewed.
It was ruled a hit and then a throwing error, right?
Yes, it's a hit and an error. By the way, Jazz had to correct the ESPN broadcast because they're like, oh, they ruled it a hit. And Jazz is like, it's also an error. Right. I threw the ball away.
Right.
That was unfortunate.
It was, because he was thinking about it, and he's like, oh, crap, I got to make this play in the hole. And he's, like, spinning through.
Well,
he's, like, narrating it. He's going through it. It was pretty awesome.
Before we get to what he said about this, my dad, I know for a fact, gets really pissed off that they interview these players in the middle of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You are a player. Obviously, they couldn't do this in football.
No way.
And there was a miscue on the play that we talked about. As an athlete, does it piss you off that they do that?
Only because it's so much passive time in baseball. I get it. But you can't ask the question right before Carlos Rodon is about to pitch. Talk amongst yourselves.
Right.
When the play is done, then ask Jazz a question. But they're asking him a question as Rodon is getting ready to throw the ball to the plate.
And yeah.
We know what happens. And he gets in a hole. He has to spin counterclockwise, make a throw. It goes way wide. So, like, he wasn't completely concentrating on that.
Yeah.
Because that question was still, like, lodged in his head. Because, by the way, after he comes back, he didn't answer the question.
Yeah. We have the audio of this. Here is Jazz Chisholm. And he's the guy you always want to ask questions to. Because we talked about.
I loved him during. The only reason I like this is because Jazz is awesome.
Oh, he's great. He's the best interview in baseball right now.
Every question, he's like, he's like laughing at every question.
He's laughing, has a good time.
Like, this dude loves what he does for a living.
And he gives honest answers.
Yes.
On Friday, and this wasn't an interview in front of a camera, but he was asked about the Devers situation in Boston, you know, and comparing himself to Devers, because Jazz will play anywhere, and Devers refused to go play first base. And Jazz gave this awesome answer where he buried the Red Sox and said, yeah, they lied to him. The Yankees didn't lie to me, essentially. So Jazz is great because he'll give an honest answer. Here's what he said about Red Sox rookie Hunter Dobbins saying he would retire before signing with the Yankees.
But like I was saying about that comment, I feel like if the Yankees was the only team offering you a job, that would be crazy, because the Yankees is one of the best sports franchises in the world. So I don't think that is even possible that that's the only team would offer you a job, if it's the Yankees. I mean, for me, I mean, I love competitiveness, but to say that being a rookie is kind of crazy to me, you know, to say that you're going to rule out 21 out of 30 teams to be a professional athlete. One second.
Right. The 1 second was to go make a play, which is, I think, what now, bothers people
before,
about
that
this.
Was before. The 1 second was, I forgot what he was
doing. No, it was the error. I'm telling you, it was the ground ball that he made the play on and made the bad throw. He said 1 second, and then Rodon needed to throw a pitch. But what'd you think of his answer? Especially saying, and going to the literal sense, this is what Tiki appreciates. He got literal and said, wait a second, you're telling me he wouldn't play for the Yankees?
I know.
They're such a great team. Yeah. Why would you not do that?
Are you crazy? The answer is he crazy? No, he's not. He's just saying that because it sounds good, and he's a Boston Red Sox.
1,000%.
So
he's doing.
No one would actually ever do that.
No.
Retire rather than play for a team that you hate.
It is like Sean and I would do something like this. I'm going to put you and I in the same book.
Okay.
We would totally make some offhanded comment about, like, let's say I was a basketball broadcaster. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what? I'm quitting Evan and Tiki. I'm going to do NBA play-by-play. And I'm bouncing around the league. I get the Nets job. Then the Nets fire me because I suck. And the only NBA team that would offer me a play-by-play job is the New York Knicks.
Mm.
Right now, I'd probably flippantly say, I'd never work for the Knicks. Screw them. I'd never do play-by-play. Are you kidding me? If that's the only team offering you a job, you will learn to like the New York Knicks.
Right.
Same thing with Sean about he gets to work in the NFL. And he says flippantly on the radio right now, but I'd never work for the Philadelphia Eagles. BS! If they're the only team offering you that job that you love, you're going to work for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes. You're right. However, I never want to work in the NFL for that reason.
Because you don't want to be put in that position?
I don't want to even be put in that position.
Yeah.
So
Hunter Dobbins is just being loyal to his fandom and really his dad's fandom. Yeah. There's no way he really means it. And if I'm a Yankee fan, I would just laugh at him.
I agree.
Any odds game
I kind of felt like that's what Jazz was doing. Like,
yeah.
Dude, are you crazy? That's whatever.
And I was just saying, the odds game says he's probably never going to be in that situation to make a decision where the Yankees are.
He's a good pitcher. So
right.
I doubt he's ever going to be in that position. You're correct. So he'll be a Red Sox for until whatever arbitration runs out, and maybe doesn't sign a long-term deal there and ends up wherever bouncing around. But still, I don't think it's something he's got to worry about. So he can easily say it.
There's one player who also said this recently. His name is Joe Kelly, the former relief pitcher for the Astros and the Dodgers. Was it the Astros? No, I guess it was just the Dodgers.
Well, and the Red Sox.
And the Red Sox, yes. And Joe Kelly made a comment, I'll never play for the Yankees. Mm-hmm. See, he's a loser reliever right now. Brian Cashman should just put it to the test as a practical joke. Mm-hmm. Call him up. Not even his agent. Just call him up and be like, yeah, it's Cash. What's up? We could use some bullpen help. Would you like to come in? And when Joe Kelly says yes, because of course he will, Cashman goes, psych! And he hangs up on him. Right. That would be the ultimate test. Because I'm telling you, Joe Kelly would, you know, run over here naked to get a job in the New York Yankee bullpen. Let's go to Christian and Yonkers. Hey, Christian.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Very good. I agree with the Yankees and Red Sox. I think that's their biggest rivalry. You know, and I understand what Dobbins is going through. We're about the same age. I'm 26, he's 25, 24. We grew up as we hated each other in the 2000s, late 2000s, yeah. Early 2000s, I say. And also, too, but I think there's something, a team that we should also talk about as a top five team, and I think that's Tampa Bay. You know, early 2010s, we didn't really like them a lot. Obviously, Sabathia, you know, came back at him. He would have lost his money right there. Obviously, the Yankees paid him for what he did.
I think the quote was, this is for you, bitch, I think was the comment from CeCe Sabathia.
Yeah, then, of course, even a couple of years ago, we didn't really like them when, you know, and especially during the COVID year, you know, where we lost to them in the division series. So I think that's a team that you can also say that's one of the Yankees' bigger rivalries.
Yeah, I think division-wise, it is a rivalry, but we're talking animosity-wise. Like, just despising a team. Now, because they were successful, I guess you kind of were frustrated by them sometimes hopping in front of you. But I never felt like they were a rival. Like, who's the player you hated?
It wasn't the players.
Hate the manager?
Yeah. You hated Kevin Cash, yeah. Especially when Kevin Cash is like, I got a bunch of horses in my bullpen. They're going to drill everybody or whatever he said a few years ago. I think it's more the idea that Tampa Bay raised than anything. And right now, they're in it. Now they're sort of in it. They're hanging around.
4.5 back?
Yeah, but they're frauds. I'm telling you right now. They got a lot of road games they have to play. Mm-hmm. This is the interesting game. Like, who's actually going to challenge the Yankees for the AL East? And the answer could be nobody, which is my contention. Or is someone going to step up? Like, Toronto is really talented. Can it be the Blue Jays? The Red Sox are really young and raw talented, but obviously this Bregman injury is a huge hindrance, and they may sell at the trade deadline. Like, who steps up and kind of challenges them and punches them in the face? Now, the Red Sox did punch them in the face over the weekend, but not enough where you think they're a threat for the American League East.
Again, put a pin in it. This weekend's a big one now at Fenway, because if the Red Sox go sweep them, we might be having a very different tune a week from now.
A very different tuna?
Tune.
Oh.
Man, you hungry?
Yes.
A very different tune. If the Red Sox sweep them next week, what are we going to come and sing?
Abuelo made one of the best tuna sandwiches I've ever had yesterday.
Well, and what makes it different than another tuna?
I don't know. Maybe it was the contrast of the mayonnaise and the cheese and the meltedness of it.
Special mayonnaise?
I don't know. I don't know what the hell was in it. All I know is I devoured it.
Threw some, stop, Sean, habanero sauce or something in it?
I don't know. All I know is it was great. I devoured that thing. Let's go to Bruce and Howell. Hey, Bruce.
Yeah, what's up, guys?
What's up?
Yeah, I have a crazy story about the Yankees-Red Sox at the game last night. First, can I say a quick story on me and Trent Grisham on Thursday night?
Yeah.
Basically, I met him at a red light after the game. Me and a couple of guys, we start screaming at him. He's kind of ignoring us, trying to get his attention, pictures, autographs. Then I screamed at him. I'm like, everyone knows it was trade, not the Juan Soto trade. I'm laughing. Anyway, last night I'm at the game.
Did that get his attention?
Yeah, he started. I think he was rolling after that. First he was like ignoring us, but he was rolling after that.
That's great. That's
anyway, last night I'm at the game. I'm behind the plate. All of a sudden, two fans start getting a little bit into Yankees Red Sox. They start squaring up. And security came flying down like NHL refs that broke them up before anything happened, but about to get wild over there.
Oh, wow. So you're saying the security was on high alert so that even if there was potential fighting, it just never happened.
All right. I don't know. I don't know if I'd believe it. Now, you saying, Sean, there is a video of a Red Sox fan and a Yankee fan fighting?
Yes, it starts as a female Yankee fan and a male Red Sox fan. I think it ends up being male, and a punch is thrown, and the Red Sox fan is ejected. I have quote tweeted the video with simply, I knew it.
Okay.
So check out the Twitter.
We have confirmed at least one fight at Yankees-Red Sox over the weekend. And being at Yankee Stadium...
But stunning, by the way, it happened in right field. You know.
Yeah. That's the prime spot. You kidding me? It's not going to happen to legend seats.
Why would a Red Sox fan be sitting in right field?
They're cockroaches, Tiki. They pop up everywhere.
I know, but just, like, was he by himself?
He's clearly by himself standing up. He doesn't have a wingman there.
Yeah, so why would you do that?
Because beggars can't be choosers. I mean, think about it.
I bet there was a cheaper ticket somewhere else. I promise you.
Yeah.
The upper deck.
And so that's just ignorance. You just don't know. This is right field. That looks good.
Yeah. I think sometimes when you're getting into a ballpark, you're just taking whatever the hell you can get.
Yeah, but you got to know. If you're a real Red Sox fan, you know.
Don't you? Well, you know that's not an ideal place to sit, but you also don't have a million choices. The Yankees draw really well. They're selling out every game. You go on SeatGeek or Ticketmaster, unless you have an unlimited amount of money, sometimes you're just taking the best bargain you could find. You know what I mean? Let's go to Andrew and Lawrence. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Tiki. I have a few points. I'll make them quick. Evan, I know you're from the Five Towns. Did you ever have the tuna mish from Chateau?
No, I never did. I must have been missing out. Where was that located?
You know where the Windmere train station is?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right across the street is Chateau.
Wow.
Surprising of eight.
Nah, I guess I didn't get out much as a kid.
I got to send you guys. So I just wanted to back up on the rivalries. I'll make it quick. I spoke about it last week. I just feel the rivalries are going. Because there's too much talk about every second of every millisecond of every other team. And to me, as a kid growing up, I didn't know all that. So when I went to go see the Yankees or the Giants, it was all built up either through the news, but not as much information. And I think it just takes away from, you know, that anger, that emotion that I used to get. My son doesn't get it. They don't get it because they just like the players. So I just think, I don't know if it'll ever be how it used to be, in my opinion. But
right. I mean, because even the sport I used to play, so many kids are fans of players from other teams, right? I'm a huge Christian McCaffrey fan. Oh, I'm a huge Lamar Jackson fan. They don't care about the Ravens or the 49ers or even the Carolina Panthers before that. They care about that individual player.
Right.
And so it dampens, like, the ire towards the team when you really like one of the players.
I think that's a part of it. I think the fantasy sports world we live in is a part of it. I also think it's just the format of the sport now. Mm-hmm. Winning the division used to be a bigger deal. Right. Then it was a bigger deal. Now it's not a big deal anymore. You also don't see those teams 19 times. Mm-hmm. So I think that also contributes to it. But I'll make you a prediction, long-term prediction. Within the next couple of years, because I actually think it's going to change sooner rather than later, because the MLB CBA actually runs out at the end of next season.
Yeah.
And whenever there's a new CBA, we see major changes. We're about to see a major change. And the major change we're going to see is radical realignment. It's already been set up. It's going to happen. The New York Mets and the New York Yankees are going to share a division. And the moment that happens,
really?
It's over. It's over. The debate is over. It's not going to be Yankees, Red Sox. It's not going to be Mets, Phillies. Yankees-Mets is going to be like a war you've never imagined. So we're already getting there with the Soto stuff and the back and forth, and they play six times a year, which they've been doing for a while. But it is going to get vicious in just a couple of years. Now, speaking of rivalries, you trust Jazz Chisholm?
I do.
I do, too.
I really like him.
We like him, right?
Yeah.
What if I told you that when we come back, we're going to hear from Jazz Chisholm?
Jazz Chisholm.
And here's what we're going to hear from him. Who is the Yankees' biggest rival? Jazz was asked the question just a few days ago, and he was asked the question by Fat Joe. And Jazz answered it very directly. And we trust Jazz, right?
We do.
Jazz Chisholm will give us his definitive answer on who the Yankees' biggest rival is. We'll also get into Pete Alonso's monster weekend and how it's causing every Met fan to universally say, this guy can never, ever, ever play for another team.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.